This is Stanley Krippner, Personal Myths and Dream Work, January 8th, 2010. This is the audio track from a DVD.
Good morning. My name is Susan Burns. Some of you have not met me. I am the Vice President of the Inner Society of Seattle. And it's my pleasure to be the person who coordinated bringing Dr. Stanley Krippner here. So I'm here introducing myself and Dr. Krippner. Just a little bit of introduction of who Dr. Krippner is for those of you who do not know him. Dr. Krippner is a senior faculty member at Seabrook University, and he has been on the faculty for 35 years. He's one of the founders of the university, and he's very respected. He is a world expert in dream studies, shamanism, transpersonal psychology, and PSI. So he's noted around the world for his wisdom and research in consciousness. He's also a very wise, not only wise, but he's a healer too. In the workshops that I have been in with Dr. Krippner, what I experience is a regular presence and really holding people in their work. And he has an inclination to do experiential work. So I know today that you would be very helped, and you will also have some experiential experiences with dream work, so that you can learn from the inside out. I hear in every workshop how he is an honorary member of this tribe and an honorary chief of that tribe. And so we know that he's very gifted in the area of shamanism. And he travels all over the world for this work. In the last 3 weeks, he's been in 3 different countries all around the globe. So we're really fortunate to have him. He's a very, very busy schedule. So we welcome Dr. Krippner.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Susan, and thank you for organizing this, and thanks to the Jung Society for sponsoring this. And we did have a very stimulating time last night. As Susan said, I was very impressed with the questions and the comments. It shows that this group is very sharp, well prepared, and I have no doubt that we'll get equally good questions and comments today. Now, there's only so much that you can do in one day, and this is to be a workshop on dreams. I know that many of you have worked from Jung's perspective on dreams for many, many years. So today we're going to focus basically on 2 exercises. And my hunch is that you will not be familiar with either of these exercises. And they can be done from many different perspectives, including a Jungian perspective. But we're going to start by listening to some anecdotal material on one of these trips Susan mentioned. Those of you who were here last night heard about some of my work in Brazil with the African Brazilian religions. That's pertinent to today, but I'm not going to repeat it because you've already heard that. Instead, I'm going to talk about my trip to South Africa in 1980, where I met with Credo Mutua, probably the most famous living shaman today, who at that time was throwing the bones for the new decade. Now, what do we mean by throwing the bones? Well, among the Zulu shamans, who are called Sangomans in that particular tradition, when you have a client coming to you for a session, you usually start out by throwing bones, and that gives you the orientation to the section. Where did the bones come from? Well, being a shaman is something like going to medical school. You have all sorts of tests to pass. You have to learn how to protect people against malevolent practitioners. You have to learn how to interpret dreams, how to use medicinal herbs, how to find lost objects, how to mediate family disputes, and the like. And as soon as you pass a test, there's a little party for you that people in the community throw, because the shaman is inextricably tied to a community. If people call themselves a shaman and if they don't have a community, something's fishy. Don't believe them. They might be very well-meaning people, and they might even be very talented people, but they aren't a shaman. Because my definition of a shaman is that a shaman is a man or a woman who has been socially designated by a community. And that individual is able to get information from unusual sources, like spirits, like dreams, from synchronicities, that are not available to other members of the community. And then they use this information to benefit the members of their community and the community as a whole. I see some of you are taking notes assiduously. So this definition has three parts, and all three go into what a shaman is. There are shamans all over the world in indigenous traditions. They're called different things in different conditions. But it's like an archetypal figure that the society needs to function. And ever since the, not even written history, but before written history, we've got records of people doing shamanic work. First of all, the shaman is designated by a community. And secondly, the shaman gets information from, shall we say, non-ordinary sources, sources that other members of the community cannot access because they don't have the talent for it, the gift for it, the genetic background for it, the personal history for it, whatever. And third, they use this information for the benefit of members of the community and the community itself. So, Kreda Mutwa was throwing the bones for the coming decade, met for members of his community, and for the Zulus as a whole. And he came up with some very specific predictions back in the 1980s. He said that in the 1980s, Nelson Mandela would be released from jail and that apartheid would come to an end. And I thought to myself, wishful thinking, the South African government will never let Nelson Mandela out of jail, much less end apartheid. Well, I was wrong and he was right. Before the end of the decade, both of those predictions came to pass. And Kreda Mutwa is still alive, still active. He is frail. He is in poor health, so he cannot accept invitations to go out of the country. But he does occasionally see visitors. I'm just glad that I saw him when he was in his prime, and I spent quite a bit of time with him, learned quite a bit from him, and talked with him about throwing the bones. And I got a little brochure about throwing the bones, which I have reproduced for the ceremony this morning. And this is a little ceremony that will teach you folks, as if you don't already know it, about symbol and metaphor. But first of all, we have to bestow our spirits into the bones. So I'm going to take these bones, the old woman, the young man, the young woman, the old man, and put them in my cap and blow upon them. Now I'm going to pass these around, and everybody else needs to blow in them, because the Zulus believe that the spirits are conveyed by your breath. And once everybody is blown upon the bones, we're going to throw them and see what pattern we come up with. Now I have some reproductions of the bones, very large, so that everybody can see them when I put them on the floor. These are just for passing around. Obviously, I'm not using the bones themselves. That would be a little bit inappropriate because I'm not a shaman. But yes, these are the designs that you do see on the Zulu bones. And if you want a thorough explanation of them, you go to Amazon.com and you buy a book called Lightning Bird by Lyle Watson, W-A-T-S-O-N. because he has all the bones pictured, and he takes a Westerner through his initiation and practice, one of the few Westerners who's been allowed to go through the training program to become a Zulu shaman. And again, the name of that book is Lightning Bird. It came out several years ago, but it's a marvelous description of Zulu shamanism. Kredu Mutwa himself has written several books, by the way. Mutwa is M-U-T-W-A. Okay, now, while the bones are going around, I'll tell you how they were actually put to use. One of the shamans I visited was Margaret Umalazi, also a Zulu Sangoma, and when she was a young girl, she had severe epilepsy. And she was at a Christian boarding school, and the epilepsy was interfering with her work. So she took medication, didn't seem to help. In desperation, she went to her hometown and went and visited the local Sangoma, who she'd stayed away from before. You know, that's pagan stuff, that's not Christian, stay away from them. Well, in desperation, she went to the Sangoma, and this old woman listened to her problems, and she said, "My dear, have you been having any dreams lately?" And Margaret thought to herself, what a stupid question, of course. I want some medical advice. I didn't come here to talk about my dreams. But being a polite young woman, she said, "Yes, I have had a recurring dream. I am at a lake, and a serpent comes out of the lake and brings me down into the lake, and I can breathe underwater, which is a surprise to me." And the old Sangoma smiled and said, "My dear, that serpent represents your ancestors, and you are being taken into the lower world, and you can breathe in the lower world, which means that you are meant to become one of us. You are meant to become a Sangoma." Now you can think lower world, unconscious, etc., 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 but in her terms, that's the lower world. And there's also an upper world, there's also Middle Earth in Zulu cosmology. She said, "If you decide to become a Sangoma, I can teach you how to heal yourself. You will never have these seizures again. But then you must undergo the training." Well, this was more than Margaret bargained for. But what could she do? She went home that night. She had a grand mal seizure. She thought she was going to die. She showed up the next morning and she said, "Okay, I'll do anything that you ask, anything you ask, but I will not give up Jesus Christ. I'm a Christian. I go to a Christian school." And the old Sangoma said, "My dear, Jesus Christ is a very powerful spirit. Of course you don't want to give up Jesus Christ. When you become a Sangoma, you're going to need all the power you can get from whatever source." So, every place we went in the Zulu country, people were saying, "You think I'm a good Sangoma? You should see the great Sangoma, Margaret Umalazi." So we finally found our way and heard Margaret's story, and that's why she's a great Sangoma. She combines the Zulu tradition with the Christian tradition. And she went through the training, and every time there was a ceremony, they would sacrifice a goat or a calf or a pig. And then after the barbecue was over, she would go through the ashes and she would find a perfect bone, clean the bone, and make one of these designs on it until she had four, and then she was able to throw the bones, which is the way you start out a counseling session or even a group session. And when we were with Kredu Mutwa, he threw the bones for the coming decade. And on the basis of the arrangement, he made those predictions. Now, from a psychological point of view, it's not that simple. We would say from a psychological point of view, he projected his intuition into the arrangement. And that arrangement gave him the vehicle to let his imagination and his intuitive powers come to fruition. Same thing as going into a crystal ball and looking. Or as Kredu Mutwa said, "Well, these bones are very much like the I Ching that you use in the United States." And at that time, yes, the I Ching was used in the United States more than China because the communists had outlawed it. It was a relic of superstition. Now it's back in vogue in China to some extent. But I still think it's used more in the United States today than it is in China. You all know what the I Ching is. It's the throwing of the coins or the yarrow stalks that, again, present a design that you look up in the manual and get your information from. Well, before the end of the morning, you're all going to have a very, very short manual for the Zulu bones, and this will give you the Zulu word for the old man, the old woman, the young man, the young woman, and it will tell you all of the possible configurations, because when you throw the bones, the design will be face up or face down. If it's face down, the bones are sleeping. If it's face up, the bones are walking. And this has implications for the arrangement, which then serves as a metaphor. And so, we would say that these designs are a symbol. A symbol is static. A symbol is an image that has a deeper meaning. This is the design for the young woman, for example. This is the design for the old man. This is a symbol for old man among the Zulus. This is the design for the old woman among the Zulus. And this is the design for the young man among the Zulus. So there you have the four possibilities. Now, how are we doing with the breath in the cap going around? Is it finished? All right. By the way, there are a number of ways that you can impart your spirits to the bones. The other way is to pass gas. And when you pass gas, the Zulus aren't offended by it. They say, oh, this is good luck. It means the spirits are with us. So remember that. You can, the Zulus find great wisdom even in a simple act like farting. Okay? Okay, now everybody's spirits are in the bones, so we're going to toss them in the air. And, oh my God, look at this. Very complicated. Very complicated. Because we have the old woman there who is walking. We have the young man there who is sleeping. And what do we have over here? And here we have the old man and the young woman, and they seem to, the young woman is asleep, the old man is very much awake, and they ended up being together. So, before we find out the traditional meaning, if those were thrown, and if you had to make some sort of meaning out of that, use your imagination and see what you would come up with in terms of some sort of explanation. Like I say, thinking of this in terms of a metaphor. So, here we have the old man wide awake, the young woman on top of him sleeping, and then the old woman wide awake, and then the young man asleep. Now, that's all the clues you're going to get. And what story can you make out of this? This, by the way, is a metaphor. A metaphor is moving. A metaphor is a series of images or even a short story that has a deeper meaning. Symbols, static. Metaphor is moving. This is moving. Okay, use your imagination. What story can you come up with all of this? What's going on here that has deeper meaning, maybe even to our group today and our work we're going to do with dreams? Yes. Yes? Yes, good. Okay, you all heard that? Okay, somebody else. Yes?
The old male energy and female energy is transmuting into the moon. So what's asleep is going to be coming over the moon. The newer energy will be coming, the new feminine and the new male will be coming away.
Okay. Yeah, you see, that applies to what we hope we will do today. Okay, very good. Another one.
Mm-hmm. We'll reach the old energy through our feminine side, through our intuitive side. We'll be more open to the old energy.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Okay.
But there's something afoot around the elders and having to, there's a deep wisdom that's being sought out. Mm-hmm. Because it's the elders that are awake, it's because they're tapping into something deeper or wiser.
Okay, now, that's just great, and I think that's enough for our purposes because we want to move on. But you can see how just on the spirit of the moment, four of our folks were able to come up with metaphorical statements that really were quite meaningful and that really made sense in terms of a workshop on dreams. But now we're going to find out, we're going to go one step further, what is the traditional meaning in terms of the old man and the old woman being wide awake and the young man and the young woman being asleep. And when that happens, the Zulu word is ledibogo. And what does that mean? It means the river crossing. So now, take that phrase, the river crossing, and how does that apply to what we're hoping to do today with our dreams? You know, visualize river crossing. Apply it to where you are in your life and why you are here today and what you hope to get today. And do a spin on river crossing. Who has an idea? Yes. Somebody over here had a hand. Yes. A what?
A transition.
A transition. Let's hope we all make a transition for the better by the end of the day. Good. Yes.
You have to leave the land where you're familiar and go into the water in order to re-emerge in the new place.
Oh, very nice. Yes, yes. Good point. Yeah. Okay, now let's just have one more. Somebody left out something very obvious. Yes. Yes, that's what I was looking for. Right. Death and rebirth, of course. The river crossing. And you've got this in so many traditions. The Greek travel across the river Styx and all of that. Okay, so we're just going to leave those on the floor for the time being to remind you of what we're going to be doing today with our dreams. And, like I say, in due course of time, you will all get one of these code sheets, and the code sheets will have the references. It will have two of the Credo Mutuo books, and it will have the Lyle Watson book that I mentioned earlier. Okay, now, feel free to join us. I like to have this exercise come first because there are always some people who simply cannot get here on time because of traffic and legitimate reasons, and so at least they've gotten here for the exercises we're going to do. And you can find out from somebody else a little bit about the bone exercise we did. Now, as the morning goes on, I'm actually going to need a couple of dreams to use for demonstrated purposes. So those of you who don't mind sharing a dream with the entire group, write down the dream, and it has to be a short dream. We don't have time for demonstration purposes to do one of those long 5-page numbers, which I'm sure some of you come up with from time to time. No, we want a dream with about 4 lines in it. That will be sufficient for demonstration purposes. And once you have come up with such a dream, just put it on the podium there, and then at the right time, I will utilize it. Now, as you can see, we're being filmed, but once we actually start the exercises, we are going to stop the filming because we want everybody's statement to be confidential. Because what happens at Good Shepherd stays at Good Shepherd. Okay? So you can be as honest and frank as you want, and there will not be a film record of it. And your friends and colleagues here, of course, will be honor-bound not to use your name and your dream and your private information when you go out into the world. Also, we are going to be doing some work in small groups and with a total group. This is a little bit alien to how Jung worked, but one of my students who actually teaches at the Jung Institute, Ian Baker, pioneered the use of group work with Jungian therapy. So I think it is legitimate to use group work now with the Jungian group. So, before we launch into our next exercise and our first dream exercise, let me just see if we have any questions about the Zulu tradition, which of course I've had a telescope and condense, but I've given you sort of the flavor of it. Yes. It's very unusual. I've never had that before. Yeah, I've done this hundreds of times. Yeah, very unusual. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because you noticed how I tossed them up in the air, and for two ending up in juxtaposition is a very rare event. So this is a very special group. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so let me explain what we're going to do today. When you work with dreams, it's my opinion that you move slowly to get the most out of the exercise and you allow for reflection. And there are some quick and simple ways to work with dreams, and some of them are very effective. But today I'm going to demonstrate two approaches that do take a fair amount of time. And at some point during the morning, in fact, very soon during the morning, you will need to decide if you want to do the exercise alone or if you want to share it with somebody in the room. And either way is fine with me. This is a very introspective exercise, and so some of you will prefer to do it alone and make copious notes in your notebooks. Others will want to hear how somebody else goes through the exercise, and so they would like to have a partner. So there's legitimate reasons either way, and I'd like you to sort of keep those in mind as we do some preliminary work here. The lecture last night was on personal mythology, and as you recall, I gave, again, a three-part definition of myth, which is a psychological definition because it uses psychological terms. But for me, myths come from the imaginal world. They come from the imagination. And they produce stories or statements about important existential human issues. And these stories and statements have behavioral consequences. They actually affect what we do in the world. Now, there are some myths that are dead myths, like I use the Aztec tradition. You don't have Aztec worshippers anymore. You don't have active Greek or Roman cults anymore. However, those religions are dead and gone, but the myths live on because the myths dealt with archetypal human experience that did have behavioral consequences. And Jean Houston, the famed philosopher and psychologist and futurist and visionary, gave a wonderful definition of myth. It's not a psychological definition, but it's wonderful. She said, a myth is something that never was but always is. Yeah, so a myth is something that you can't really take literally. It's something that probably never happened in the way that the story unfolds, but it hits upon the essence of the human condition and existential issues in the human condition so that whether it came from Africa or Australia or Native American lore, it still applies to the human condition today. Myth is something that never was but always is. And I really love that definition of myth. Now, in addition to personal myths, of course there are cultural myths. And I gave you some examples of cultural myths last night. The cultural myths among the Zulus are fantastic. Kredu Mutwa has collected them. And one of the cultural myths is about the earth mother and the sky god who made it, and they had two children. And the two children were sent down to Earth because the Earth was in terrible trouble. There were monsters roaming the Earth and devastating the humans. The humans didn't know how to protect themselves. So they had two sons, a he-son and a she-son. The she-son was a little bit androgynous. No, you won't find she-sons in the Christian tradition. Only in the non-Christian traditions you have this blurring of sexual identity. And then you've got a lot of it, by the way. But the he-son came down to earth and he taught people how to kill the monsters and protect themselves and make weapons and be safe. So what did he get for his troubles? They got jealous of him and they killed him. And the sky god and the earth mother, of course, brought him back to life, and so he could be sent on other errands, never again to earth. They didn't appreciate him. But then the people on earth didn't know what to do with their new freedom. They didn't know how to feed themselves or build shelters. So then they sent the she-son down. And the she-son knew about agriculture, knew about childbirth, knew about how to build houses, and he helped them domesticate plants and feed themselves and protect themselves. Were they grateful? No, they were jealous of him. They killed him off too. So the sky god and the earth mother said, look, we're not going to resurrect the she-son until the people on earth come to their senses and know how to treat people better. And they're still waiting. They're still waiting for the end of war and conflict before the she-son gets resurrected. So that's a beautiful Zulu myth, and it's very, very pertinent to our times. Well, in addition to family myths and personal myths, cultural myths and personal myths, there are family myths. And different groups say, look, everybody in our family must marry somebody of the same faith, or everybody in our family must be a professional. Everybody in our family has to earn a lot of money, etc., etc., etc. And then there are institutional myths. All religions have institutional myths. Even businesses have institutional myths. Schools have institutional myths. So, you've got ethnic myths also. Ethnic groups have their own myths. These are apart from the cultural myths because ethnicity can run around the globe. So you've got all sorts of groups that have their own myths. And we're going to do a short exercise this morning to demonstrate the impact of family myths. And for this, we're going to need a little more space. So I'm going to let the bones take a little vacation to give us some space right up in the middle of the floor. Maybe we'll come back to them a little later. Okay, you folks have been sitting patiently for a while. Now I'm going to have you stand up for a little bit. And stand in the space where you can walk forward or walk backward or walk to the side. And here's a down. Just imagine that you're standing. Okay, I'd like you to take one step back and imagine that you're in the body of a parent, a father or a mother, a stepfather or a stepmother, or somebody who is like a parent to you. And put your body in the position that reminds you of that parent. What would be a typical position that that parent would be holding with their body? Now, how does it feel to be in that parent's body? Maybe a little bit different than in your own body. Maybe more pleasant, maybe unpleasant. And now imagine the parent is saying something that represents one of their basic personal myths, which has become a family myth. What might the parent be saying? You have to work hard in order to succeed. Or the parent might be saying, whatever you do, don't marry somebody outside of your own faith. Or the parent might be saying, the world is a dangerous place. You have to be on your guard all the time. Or the parent might be saying, the world is a wonderful place, and most people you can trust and enjoy. Okay, imagine that your parent is giving you some advice in terms of their own worldview, their own personal mythology. And now come back one step forward into your own body. Relax. And just spend a few seconds asking yourself, what impact did that parental myth have upon me? Was it a positive impact, or was it a negative impact, or was it a little bit of both? And do I still buy into that statement? Is it still affecting my life? Thank you for the music. That'll facilitate what we're doing. Okay, now take two steps backward. And now you're in the body of another parent, or step-parent, or parent figure. And again, put your body in the position that's characteristic of that parent. And how does it feel to be in that parent's body? And imagine that that parent is saying something that represents their mythical outlook on life. Take things one day at a time. You've got a plan for the future. If you commit one more sin, you're going to go straight to hell. Do some good work for people who are less fortunate than you are. Okay, these are various statements that your parents might have told you. And take two steps forward, back in your own body, and ask yourself what impact those myths had on your personal life. Positive, negative, a little bit of both, or maybe nothing. Okay, now take one step forward, and you're in your own body. And imagine one of your own postures. How do you feel comfortable standing? What's the best way that you can stand and be in your body? And what's one of your own personal myths? Something that is something you very firmly believe and that you act upon. Role of conduct for your life. And ask yourself if that myth is serving you well. And let's hope it is. If not, maybe it will change by the end of the day. Okay. Now, do some movement. Start walking around the room in the spirit of that personal myth. If it's a very heavy personal myth, you might walk around very slowly, like the weight of the world is on your shoulders. It's a very happy personal myth. You might be a little more lighthearted and work more rapidly. If it's reflective, you might, again, walk slowly, but in a more contemplative mood. And as you walk around the room, this is a time for you to decide if you're going to go through the day working with yourself or working with a partner. And if you're going to work with a partner, you might catch somebody's eye and ask if they would like to be your partner. And this can be somebody you know or somebody you don't know. Makes no difference to me. And once you have found somebody that you'd like to work with, rearrange your chairs and belongings so that you can sit down near that person And you can start sharing what has happened during the last 10 minutes of the exercise. If you're going to work by yourself, you can go and sit down at any time. Almost all of you have journals with you, and you can make notes in your journal some of the things that you have learned during the past few minutes, because we'll be coming back to some of those themes as we work with dreams. Okay, let me just find out. Is there anybody who wants a partner who does not have a partner? Raise your hand. Okay, I think everybody's pretty well settled. And so now just take a few minutes to reflect either by yourself or with a partner. And then while you're doing that, remember I need some sample dreams. I don't see anything on the podium. So while you're doing that, maybe one or two of you can write down a short dream. And oh, here we have a volunteer already. Thank you. Okay, fine. Oh, more than enough. Great, that's enough. Put those up. Put it on. That'll be fine. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so now we're going to turn off the camera so that anything that you say will be just private within the group.
And that is the end of the recording. This recording was made on DVD, and it included some images. The DVD is available in the library at the C.G. Jung Society, Seattle. The copyright is C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.